everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are often one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And Author Magazine is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA and their fabulous yearly writers' conference at pnwa.org. So if you were to meet my guest today, Kevin O'Brien, at a party, and you played the game of what does he do for a living, you would say to yourself, he is such a nice young man. I wouldn't doubt if his job is to deliver cookies to children in hospitals or take his ukulele to the old age home and sing, "You are the sunshine of my life." But if you guessed that, you would be wrong, because in fact, he spends every evening writing about serial killers. But that's just the way it goes with writers. You can be a really nice guy and still like to write about people who kill people. And that's why I'm so glad to have Kevin on the show with me today. Kevin, welcome to Author.
Thank you, Bill. That was a great introduction.
Well, it's true. I'm trying to dub you. I've never dubbed anyone anything, but if I'm going to dub it, I'm going to dub you the nicest scary man in Seattle.
I will take that. That's a great. Well, and I want to back up and say, you know, I like that young man too. That was pretty good. I didn't realize I'm as old as the Pacific Northwest book conference. PNWA. I've got the wrong thing. Initials. I was born in 1955, so I'm just as old as the organization. Yeah. So I really appreciate.
Okay, I'm going to lavish you with praise, but holy moly, Kevin. I've met you. I've looked you in the face. Well, I thought you were younger than I was.
Get out of here.
I'm not just flattering my guests. Now, before I forget, because I always forget to do this, I'm a very bad host, please tell our listeners what they can run out and buy now from Kevin O'Brien, your latest offering.
Wow, do I appreciate that's great. But that's a good setup. The book is called Terrified. And it's $9.99. It's in big premium paperback, and it's very scary. It's a big fat book. And
do you get published by Kensington?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, that's them.
How do I remember that? Excellent. Okay.
You may be another year older today, but that mind is—you're just sharp as ever.
That's right. I'm just getting sharper the older I get.
as the years go on.
All right. So Terrified is
and
out
happy
now,
birthday,
and
by
I
the way.
Assume. I know you. I know how you work. There's always one down the pike. You could probably see it from where you're sitting right now.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
What's the next one out?
The next one is due on my editor's desk, God help me, July 30th. And I'm only on the first chapter right now. So it's going
to
be
serious?
An intense. Yeah, but I do. I outline all my stuff, and I have 131-page outline for this. So I'm praying that this
half a novel.
It's half a novel, you know, and hopefully I'll just have to fill in the blanks. And the cool thing to that is, my editor. There's no surprises when I deliver the final book to him. He knows every scene practically that's coming at him, and so usually by the time I deliver a book. He there's no surprises. He
right.
You know, will have one or two little things that he wants me to change at the most, and then it's on to print. So it's a very quick process once the outline's done, and once that's delivered, it's usually done in about 2 or 3 months. So.
Wow. Well, you know, I was thinking about you, Kevin, because there's something been on my mind lately. I've been thinking a lot about the difference between what I think of as the writer and the author. All human beings, I think, who like to write are writers. So first of all, they have to write. So the writer is the one who sits there at the computer or the paper and puts their ideas that are playing on the movie screen of their imagination and put it onto the page somehow. And that's the writer. And it's solitary work for the most part. And, you know,
right.
Well, it begins always as solitary work. But then you become an author, in my opinion, the moment you show your work to anyone, the moment it, you decide, even if it's just to your mom, you say, I'm going to share this with the world. And I think that's a very different experience. And I, and in all my years of writing myself, and now in interviewing hundreds of writers, I have come to the conclusion that for the most part, although I don't know if I include you in this group, believe it or not, most of the human beings who like to write are most challenged with the author part. That is what gives them the grief. That when we talk about being writers, we're really talking about the experience of having to share that work, and that that is often where the challenges come in. But I don't know if that's true of you. I think you actually it seemed like you came to that was actually easier for you, maybe. Or am I misreading?
I think I kind of like that. I love how you put that about the movie screen of your imagination. I think that's perfect. I love that. And that's how I kind of think of it. I kind of picture the audience out there reading my book and getting creeped out. And I always keep the reader in mind. I know some authors, I never think about the reader. I have my own vision and blah, 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 blah. But I always have the reader in mind because I'm always thinking, is this entertaining? Is this keeping them interested? Is it funny? Do they like this person? So that's a given for me. So who knows? Maybe I'm an author at heart. I'm always thinking of the reader.
But I think that's okay. I think, you know, I was thinking of myself and how ultimately the experience of being an author, of deciding to share my work all the way back to when I was a very young man and doing theater and poetry readings and that kind of thing to now when I do the magazine and the books I'm writing, ultimately it's deepened my relationship to the work, and it's actually like focused my craft. But I know for me that when I said, okay, I want to do this for a living, it made it infinitely harder the instant I made that decision. That's what it did to me. You know, I immediately, my writing got worse immediately as soon as I made that
worse.
Decision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it did. It took a long time for me to come back from that. But not every writer is like that at all. I think
maybe that's the sophomore slump happening. You know, they talk about that.
Well, this is back when I was like 20, 25, just decided to write a novel. Just decided to write a novel, make a living off it. My writing regressed because I got in my head. I think that being an author, you can get into your own head about it. But it doesn't sound like that really happens to you. The knowledge that people are going to read it doesn't interfere with the experience of writing it.
No, but I did experience sort of a sophomore slump, sort of, so to speak. After I got my first book published, suddenly it went from being an escape, something I did to, I used to work for the railroads, and writing was my escape because I would be stuck in like Pasco, Washington, not to slam a city, but I'd be stuck in like Pasco, Washington at the Red Lion for, you know, 5 days, and there was nothing to do. This is back before the internet, back before a lot of stuff.
Right.
No, in fact, I had an electric typewriter back then. Jeez, I didn't even have a computer.
Good old electric typewriters.
Yeah, I had a Selectric. Now you know that
I had one of
1955
those.
Is for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure you did. Everybody, well, you're too young for that, let me tell
you. I was writing from, you know, I was writing when I was a boy, you know, so I was.
Oh, you when you were just a kid, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I started early.
Well, some of the joy, I think, goes out of it after you do get published. It sounds weird, but I think it goes from being an escape, something you do to aspire to be someplace else, to when you're actually doing it for a living, then it's the tables turn a little, and suddenly the last thing you want to do is sit down at the computer and grind out
a
book.
It
becomes a job, and suddenly you want to clean the oven, you've got to clean out a closet, you've got to organize your sock drawer, anything to before you sit down and write the book. When, you know, back for your first book, you were in a cafe, huddled over, you know, couldn't wait to get out and
see,
do your writing.
See, this is what I'm talking about. This is the role of being an author. It's one of the challenges that faces us as human beings who like to write. How do we keep our relationship to the work, which we, you know, you wouldn't be doing this if you didn't like doing it. There's no reason in the world to write if you don't like to write.
I think people just don't like having the pressure.
You know, it's a creative process.
It is.
Now, I see I have a caller who I think would like maybe to ask a question. So I'm going to brave here. Colin is his name. And I'm going to just – Colin, are you there?
I'm here.
Did you have a question for Kevin or
myself? Hi, Colin.
Hi, Kevin. I'm halfway through Terrified, and I can't put it down. Well done.
Hey, this is what I like to hear.
And Aunt Mary just started reading it, and she loves it, too. So you're...
Oh, my God.
You're a big hit in the Northwest.
Oh, I can't... Well, I thank you, Colin. You are too great to be reading it. And, the next hero from my next book is named Colin, so...
Oh.
No relation. So
okay.
If anything bad happens to that, Colin, don't worry. It's no relation to you.
well done. I just wanted to say congratulations on yet another one. I love your books, and I'm a huge fan. I always pass along them as my best Christmas gifts to give out.
Oh, my God. Well, Colin, you're getting your $10 later, okay?
Whatever.
Well, Colin, thank you so much for calling in. It's so great
hey,
to hear.
Hey, thanks, Colin.
All right, take care.
Oh, it's nice to hear, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, isn't it nice? I didn't.
You told me a great story. Speaking of authors, this, talking about the relationship between being a writer and an author. When I interviewed you about a year and a half ago now, for Author Magazine, you told a story of you write in the evening, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And so you were at your little computer, so you'd be there writing along, trying to get your story told, and then you get an email. Oh, you've kept me up all night. You're scaring me. And so there it is. You're on the one hand, you're writing there, and you're by yourself. You're thinking of your readers, but they're not there with you physically.
Right.
And yet, sort of psychically, and now you're hearing from them. And you like that. I mean, here we just got to hear from Colin. And for you, that must feed you.
It is. It's great. It's part of the – well, you know, it comes back to what we were talking about. It's the author process, and it's actually when you reach their audience. And when I hear from somebody, it's just a real – it's a thrill. I love hearing from readers, and it sounds sadistic, but it's like you said, it's very cool when I'm sitting there at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'll get a "You've got mail," and
right.
I check it out, and it's somebody saying, "I just can't put this book down," and I've double checked my front door, and I've made sure all the windows are locked.
Mission accomplished. This.
Exactly, mission accomplished. I feel like, hey, I've done my job, and, you know, I will immediately email them most of the time. I'll try and email them right away and say, well, if you're still up, I know that I'm up, and I'm just grinding out these fictional things, and enjoy. I hope it keeps you scared and turning the pages.
It's
great.
You like scared, don't you? I mean,
up to a point.
Not in real life, but artistically, you enjoy the experience of seeing a scary movie, of reading a scary book.
Yes,
is that right?
Yeah, I do. I just watched Rear Window for the zillionth time last night, and I still get a charge out of it. I still get lots of thrills. I think Hitchcock is so timeless that it was a lot of fun just seeing different moments that still sent chills up my spine. I love that stuff.
I don't write scary stuff. I think we talked about this. I never understand. I can't stand to be scared. So I always try to imagine what writers go through if they write stuff that's different than what I do. And I have to imagine that when you're writing it, you have to kind of go to a scary, I don't know, a scary
to
place.
A dark
you have
place.
To go somewhere within you that understands what it is to be scared and what the value in being scared is. Right? I mean, you have
right.
to go somewhere emotionally. You can't just make it up in your mind. You have to go somewhere emotionally
mm-hmm.
for it, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that reminds me of a story. Jenny Shortridge, one
yes.
of my fellow Seattle 7 authors,
yep.
Was telling me, she said, I've got a beautician who's involved in getting chakra readings and aura cleansing, and I think maybe it's the other way around,
okay.
chakra cleansing and aura readings, whatever.
Okay.
I'm not a big aficionado on that. But she said, you know, she'll do it for free. Do you want to do you want a session with her? I was like, sure, why not? So I went to the woman's beauty parlor that was in the first floor of her apartment, and she sat me down in the chair and started waving her arms over me and her, you know, and she got down to my feet and she said, you know, there's some cracks down here. And I said, oh, yeah? And she said, yeah, and you're letting different things in. And I said, okay, well, she said, well, you're a very nice guy, but you're letting, there's an evil little man that's getting in. and he is full of horrid ideas. And she said, and yet you're letting him in. You're working with him on something. And I said, well, did Jenny tell you I write thrillers? They're sort of gruesome serial killer thrillers. And she said, no, but this makes total sense, this little man. So when I get those emails late at night from somebody who can't sleep, I think, oh, that little man's working
little man.
Overtime.
God, well, she's good then.
You got to get rid of him.
Unless she was prompted. Yeah, you should have said to her, look, don't get rid of him. Do not cleanse him.
I don't
need that man.
That's my cash cow.
I can't come all night. I don't know what I'll do with myself. You know, it's funny. So you're an outliner, right?
Yeah.
You said you got a 130-page outline. You want to hear about how not an outliner I am? This is so funny. This is a story of – so I can't outline. I've tried. I just can't do it. So I finally gave over and said I'm not an outliner. But I should have known. So the first presentation I ever gave, first, you know, public speaking sort of presentation, this big two-hour thing. And I'd never given – I'd done theater, which is one thing, and I'd done public speaking where I had little 10- or 15-minute things I'd kind of memorized. But I'd never done just a two-hour lecture where I couldn't memorize the whole thing. So it was I'd have little notes, I thought, and I'd work off of that. Well, so I was doing this presentation, and I had a PowerPoint, and the PowerPoint kind of served as my sort of outline, so I would look at whatever was up there, and that would, you know, kind of guide it. But I thought, no, God, 2 hours, that's a long time. I better create a stack of 3x5 cards, and each 3x5 card will have my notes about what I'm going to say about that particular
point,
slide. Right? That was my big plan. So I filled out all these 3x5 cards. I had this big stack of them, and I go there. And I start doing this presentation. And, of course, right away I never look at the 3x5 cards. I'm just talking and talking and looking up. But part of my presentation includes movies, little two-minute movies, like from my, you know, author. And so I turn the lights off and bang, we're playing the movie. So while the movie's playing, I got nothing to do. And I say to myself, oh, I got an idea. I'll go look at my cards, right? I wrote the things out, and I'll look at my cards to tell me what the next slide is, and I'll have an idea of what I should say, right? So this is what not an outliner I am. I flip through, and I find the card for the next slide, and it's as if I have suddenly become afflicted with dyslexia. I can't
No.
read it. I can't read it.
Oh, my God.
My mind won't even allow me to see it. And I said, okay, clearly, I don't know why I wrote this.
I'm not an outline guy.
So I'm not an outlining guy. So I am the antithesis of an outlining guy. And so
well,
tell me this
know,
as
I
someone
am...
who does outline. This is what I'm always curious about. The reason I can't outline is because I don't know. I can hear my cat fighting with another cat outside my door. The poor
oh,
cat.
Geez.
I know. The only reason I can't outline is I don't know what's going to work until I'm writing it. You know what I mean? Until I'm actually in typing, you know, putting the words down that will make a scene, I don't know if this idea in my head is legitimate until I'm writing it or not. But you as an outliner must have some way of judging that before you actually create the scene, right?
I sure do. Oh, I can hear that cat, by the way.
Can you?
Oh,
yeah.
I just heard a
meow. Has appeared in our yard and is trying to befriend and or torment my cat.
So and or torment? Oh, my gosh.
I know. They're going at it. So as an outliner, how does that work in terms of seeing the thing before you actually write the dialogue and the description and so on? How do you know if it works?
Well, when I start a book, I just start writing notes off the top of my head. It's just sort of stream of conscious, and I just kind of, you know, I'll write anything that pops into my head, and there'll be pages and pages of that. And eventually, after I've gotten kind of tired of just this unstructured note-taking, I decide to start telling the story. And my outlines and I'm not a very good outliner, so my outlines are like mini novels. They actually have description, and I write them for my editor to read almost as if he's reading a novel. And what he gets is sort of a pared-down version of what the book is going to be, and it starts out with, you know, dialogue and everything else, and outside of being told in the present tense, it reads just like a novel. So
what you're really doing is writing a kind of quasi first, almost like writing a quasi first draft, but you let yourself
exactly, and it's gotten so that he actually waits until he gets that before he approves the actual, you know, says
right.
give him his money. So
well,
he
sure.
gets he doesn't get a 6-page outline, he gets a 100 and like 100-page outline. It's
now,
getting
you're a fan
longer
of the cinema,
each time.
Are you not?
Oh,
I know you
big fan.
Rear Window.
Yes.
And your first book, your first novel, which was not a horror novel,
Rear Window last night.
Didn't it have to do with Hollywood a little bit? Your very first novel.
Very first book, yes, it did. I used to call it The Thornbirds Go to Hollywood. It was actually called Actors, and it was this sweeping saga that started in the 1950s with struggling actors and covered their lives up through the 80s when the book was written. And it was told from the heart, and I put my guts into it, but it was also written in the days of Jackie Collins. So my agent at the time kept saying, more sex, more sex, more sex. And so there is, like, every 10 or 12 pages, there's another sex scene. And the result is when the book got published, my mother was reading it.
Oh, no. And your first book.
Yeah. And she said, well, Kevin, you know, I usually like that sort of thing, but you just seem to get more graphic each time another scene came up. And she said, it's very difficult to read. And I said, well, you know, Mom, I'm sorry. Do you think I should have written it under a different name? And she said, oh, it's okay. Dad and I will change ours. So.
But I was saying,
that was the book.
But you know what that reminds me of? This funny story. My brother, very funny guy, did stand-up comedy once. He was a young man. He was like 20 years old. He knew he was a good actor who was very funny, and he thought, "Oh, I could do stand-up." So he went down to give it a try to this, you know, we were in Providence at this little comedy shop where they have like an amateur night. And he got up there, and he had prepared some material, but he hadn't really practiced it as much as he thought he could kind of wing it and he'd be okay because he was so sort of naturally funny. But he got up there, and it's a very unusual experience up there, just Mike, if you're an actor. That's one thing. The audience is polite and they're sitting there. But now he's up on stage with just him and this mic. And they're drinking and they're talking to each other. And he's not getting laughs, right? He's telling his jokes. And it's a very lonely experience, especially if you're new to it. I know experienced comedians know how to handle it, but he'd never done it before. Yeah. And so he's telling his jokes. They're not working. And then finally he tells a joke. And I don't know if I can say this on the air, but I'm going to. But include the word fuck. And he got a huge laugh.
We just got blue. Okay.
Right, we just got bleep. And then he said to me, Bill, the next thing I know, I'm saying beep all over this place. That's all I can do. He was so disgusted with himself that he got up there, and he was panicked, and all he had left was that curse word to get some
kind
of...
What was the F word? Dropping a few F-bombs.
Yeah, he was saying he had to do it over. And it reminds me of your story with your agent. More sex. More sex. That's the only thing that keeps turning the pages.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, you know, but it is funny that you bring up that the comedian, because I sometimes think as an author, people out there, you know, you have your people that really like your stuff, but then you have, you know, people pick up a book and there's a part of them that really doesn't want to like it. It's almost like a comedian that you see, that you're thinking, this guy isn't going to be funny. And I always think that when I'm writing a book, you know, I've got to please those people who are just picking it up and going, this isn't going to scare me, or this is going to be boring. And I always think, you know, you've got to entertain them. You've got to keep them interested.
Does that help push
page
you,
one?
That sense of like, I want to try and, there's that person who's on the bridge. They want to cross over to the land of Kevin O'Brien.
Right.
Does that help push you? Because you know your readers, that like Colin, God bless him, you know, you've got them who,
yeah,
they know they like you,
them.
and they're your dedicated readers, but you want to keep finding those people who are not sure, right?
Oh, yeah, you bet. It, you know, it's a challenge. I think, you know, I wasn't very popular in grade school or high school, and I had one or two. I know. What? It's so sad. So tragic. Sitting in the lunchroom by myself at the table. I know. Get out the violins. Anyway, I think there's a my brother-in-law was once asked to introduce me for a thing because he's on the Today Show, so they got him up, and he had to wing some sort of speech to introduce me. And he said I had a good combination of a lack of confidence and confidence. And he said, that's what seems to motivate me, is the desire to sort of entertain and to sort of be, to win somebody over, at the same time having the confidence to you know, dive right in there and do it. So there's a little, you know, armchair analysis of myself.
Well, I think every writer needs that to some degree, because every writer,
I think so,
is going to need to have confidence at the page. You've got to have, at some level,
right,
you have to believe that what you think is scary is scary. What you think is profound is profound. Because the thing is, at that moment, no matter how many Collins there are in the world, they haven't read your next book. And so,
right. You
know, it's always there's always an unknown quality. So you have to have confidence in that. And every writer I've talked to, and I've talked to so many different kinds of writers, and some writers who have had tremendous success, both, you know, critical success and then commercial success, still that insecurity. I mean, I tell the story often
that insecurity.
Of Louis
yeah.
Sachar. You know who he is? He wrote Holes and, you know, and
yes.
he was talking to Judy Blume. Now, Judy Blume has published over 100 books.
Yes, my
and
God.
He said to her, he was at some conference with her, and he said, do you ever finish a book and just think to yourself, I wonder if this is any good at all? And she turned to him and said, every one.
I quote her the same thing. I cannot like a book until I read the first good review. I think it stinks until I get until I get that first good review, and then I'm like, oh, phew, and I have to distance myself from it. I totally agree with her. Every single book I have written, I've always thought
this is it. So all you writers out there who are trying to get your first agent, trying to publish your first book, and you're saying to yourself, oh, I'm so insecure and I'm so worried.
Yeah.
Do you understand? You're hearing it? Kevin's published a few books. He's still going through it. It's part of the terrain. You have to deal with the uncertainty.
It is part of the process.
The insecurity.
And, you know, it's a good thing. Oh, go
ahead.
It
challenges you. It keeps you alive. It keeps you on edge.
It does.
And I think it's okay.
Yeah, and I think it's bad to have too much confidence. I know I was in a writer's group years ago, and this one woman who's a very academic and very brilliant writer had a whole chapter that you couldn't figure out. I mean, it was told that from the point of view of a mentally challenged man,
right. And
he was on a train, and he kept going in and out of different time, and I
couldn't
make heads or tails of it, and it
went
on.
Well, there's
for
a
like
famous book, Sound and the Fury, where Faulkner does that in the first chapter.
He does that in the first chapter? I didn't know.
The first section is just told from the point of view of the...
The
idiot, you know, Sound and the Fury is... Shakespeare quote that he took, but yes, and it bounces around, and it is damn hard to follow. It's kind of brilliant. But
and I think she thought she was Faulkner, and
she probably did.
I took her to task on it, and she said, oh, well, this is from his point of view, it's blah, 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 and I finally just said, do you really think, that the person who just paid $24 for the hardcover of this book owes you something, that they have to sit through, 19 pages of drivel?
No, they don't owe you anything. You owe them the best book you can. And
exactly. If
they want to go along for the ride, fine, but they're not going to do it simply because you wrote it. You have to, for me, when I read a writer, and of course everybody has different criteria, but there's something, do I trust them? Do I trust them to be honest or funny or whatever it is I'm looking for in that experience? Do I trust that they're going to provide that to me? And if for some reason that's betrayed at a certain point, I have a certain number of pages, then I feel like, well, they've shown me what they're going to do, and I don't want to go along for this ride. And so I think you do have to extend a really trusting hand in that first Well, what was it that Mickey Spillane said? The first chapter sells this book. The last chapter sells your next book.
Hey, that's a great quote.
Is that
great? I like
so
that.
You've got to extend the trustworthy hand and then send them out with this. Well, I just heard a little bird. She's telling me that our time together, Kevin, has come to a close.
No, can't be. Can't be.
It's true. See how fast it goes? All right, so once again, terrorized, what's it called?
Terrified.
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 And if you don't believe me, believe Colin. It's scary.
And his Aunt Mary.
She's quaking in her boots. Kevin.
She is.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure as always.
Had a great time, and happy birthday again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Good luck with this book and all the others to follow.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Well, there you go, people. Kevin O'Brien started out writing about movie stars, ended up writing about serial killers. You never know where you're going to go, but he followed his passion. We didn't get to talk about that, but he really did. He found something he loved to do, which was to scare people, and he does it very well. So find what you love to do, and if you really love it, I guarantee you, you will do it as well as you can do anything. So until we talk again, remember, the books you write, the lives you lead, they are one in the same. Bye now.